Thanks for having me. Yeah, as Matt said, my name's Mark Westhuizen. So in Australia, everyone gets a nickname. So my nickname, Westhuizen, Westie. I get called West a lot. I get called Wes occasionally. Hi, Wes. My really good friends, they call me Dub, which is short for W, which is short for West, which is short for Westhuizen, which is short for Mark Westhuizen. So that's how nicknames work in Australia. They either get shorter and shorter and shorter, or they kind of go out and back again. So at our church at Cleveland today, one of our worship leaders, his name's Hayden. He's leading the service today. His nickname is Dos, D-O-S. Hayden, Haydos, Dos. Go figure. So if you want to speak Australian, just give someone a nickname that has about four or five steps to get there, and you'll be okay. Is mic working okay? Are we happy with you? You can hear me all right? Yep.
Beautiful.
Well, thanks for having me today on Multicultural Sunday. It's a real joy and privilege to be here with you this morning. And this is kind of the sermon. This is the sort of sermon you don't want to walk out partway through, okay? So if you're thinking, I might just nod off for a bit and then come back in a bit later, don't do that. Don't do that. Because at the start, I'm going to say something and you're going to do this. What? How is someone preaching on Sunday about to say that? How can any pastor say that, let alone the pastor preaching at the church? I'm in this morning. So don't leave partway through because you're not going to like what I'm about to say. We've got that presentation there. I've got some things to help you out along the way. Here we go, Multicultural Sunday. You're not going to like this. You're not going to like this. I'm going to say something in a sec, and you're going to disagree with me. You're going to say, what? I don't think that's right. How can he say that? You might even be a little bit offended. You might say, I'm really not happy about that. What's Matt's email address? By the way, his email address is on the bulletin. So if you want to send him a concerned email tomorrow morning, I can help you do that. So you're not going to like what I'm going to say, but this is why it's so important not to switch off halfway through. At the start, you'll disagree with me, maybe even a touch offended by what I'm going to say, but by the end of the day, you'll agree with me, I guarantee. You'll thank me for saying it, and you'll be about 200 times more blessed. Big claim, I know, but that's where we're going today. So hopefully it all works out okay, otherwise we'll be in trouble. Here we go. So here's what I'm about to say. You are the least important person in this church. You are the least important person in this church. So if anyone's going to miss out, it should be you, because you're the least important person. What you want, your preferences, your dreams, your ideas, your personal comforts, how you're feeling about everything, you're actually the least important person in this church. You matter less than everyone else in the room. Don't leave now. Please. That's ridiculous. I'm out of here. You are the least important person in your church. That's what we're looking at today. Multicultural Sunday. Because we like to think we're the most important person in the church. And we like to think that, you know, we really matter. And kind of the church should be composed of all kinds of people. Isn't that what we're celebrating today? Multicultural Sunday. The church, at its best, is composed of all kinds of people. What did we have, 20 or 29 different nations represented here today? The church should be composed of all kinds of people. Isn't that the heart of the kind of Christian message, that no matter who you are, where you come from, culturally, language, ethnicity, political persuasion, football team you go for, no matter what it is, that there should be great diversity in the church, generations, maturity, a whole bunch of different things, that the church should be composed of all kinds of people. It is the one place in society that should celebrate diversity more than any other. And when you look at the Bible, at the beginning, on the day the church was birthed, in Acts chapter 2, we see this picture, right, of the diversity, that the church is composed of all kinds of people. It is a multilinguistic, multi-ethnic, multinational entity on day one. And I want to take you to Acts chapter 2, just listen along. And this is the start of the church, the birth of the church. Now there were staying in Jerusalem, God-fearing Jews from every nation under heaven. When they heard this sound, the crowd came together in bewilderment because each one heard their own language being spoken. Utterly amazed, they asked, "Aren't all these who are speaking Galileans? How is it that each of us hears our own language?" You know, it's like, what? I thought I was the only one that spoke Swahili here. How come I'm hearing Swahili? What? This guy doesn't even know Swahili. He's a Galilean. How come I'm hearing my native language? That's what's happening. Parthians, Medes, Elamites, residents of Mesopotamia and Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia, Egypt, and parts of Libya near Cyrene, visitors from Rome, Jews and converts to Judaism, Cretans and Arabs, we hear them declaring the wonders of God in our own tongue. And later on in verse 41 of chapter 2 of Acts, it says, those who accepted the message were baptized. About 3,000 were added to their number that day. So on the day the church was born, 3,000 people from Asia, from Europe, from Africa, from the Middle East. As far as we know, there were no South Americans there. Sorry about that. It's a bit far to get there in the ancient world from South America to the Middle East, to the ancient Near East. But on the day the church was born, it was multinational. It was a multicultural group of people. So of course we believe the church should be composed of all kinds of people, don't we? Hasn't that always been the way? I mean, the Great Commission, going to all the world and make disciples of all nations. You know, in Acts 1:8, to the very ends of the earth, there's a sense in which that we should be composed of all kinds of people. You'd all agree with me, right, on that? You'd all say, yeah, of course, Mark. You didn't need to come here from Cleveland and tell us that this is killing me. Can I use a handheld mic?
You can. What?
I've got wedge-shaped ears, man. That's a problem. Is that better? Does that work? Okay, we'll try it out. Our tech guy, Shane, at our church, he's like, Mark, just stop fiddling with the headset. And it's like when a fly's buzzing near your ear and you just can't shake it. It's terrible. Anyway, thanks, Matt, for helping me out there. So far, so good. Church to be composed of all kinds of people. It was on day one. We all embraced that. That's why we're celebrating multiculturalism today on this particular Sunday. So that's what we say we believe. But I think there's a real disconnect because, like, the myth is that we say the church to be composed of all kinds of people. That's what we say we believe. But here's what I think is the problem. There's a difference, there's a disconnect between what we say we believe, the church to be composed of all kinds of people, and what we actually believe. I think there's a disconnect. Because here's what we actually believe. I reckon, this is my kind of understanding of how people work. What we actually believe is this. The church to be composed of all kinds of people, so long as they're like me in the ways that matter most to me, and it doesn't affect my life in any way. I'm all for diversity. Bring it on. The more the merrier. Providing, we agree on the things that are important to me, and it doesn't really affect my life in any way. That's kind of often how we really live. And I've got a bunch of examples I want to show you about how this works. If your church is anything like my church, this is often how it works. Oh, what's the first one we got there? Style of worship music. The church should be composed of all kinds of people, providing that they sing the songs I want to sing, the way I want to sing them, in the key I want to sing them in, as frequently as I want to sing them. And if not, Houston, we have a problem. You might have come to church today and been like, yes, Dots is on. This is going to be awesome because I love the way that she leads. Or you might have turned up and gone, oh, that's not my favorite. Or, not that song, Dots. We did that one last week, can't we? If we have to sing that song one more time, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know? We have this diversity. We're all for diversity, providing we can sing the songs we want to sing, the way we want to sing them, and worship in the style that we want to worship in. Going with that is people who show their love of God, like I do. So some people show their love of God in, you know, very expressive ways. You know, they're dancing down the aisles and waving and calling out, and it's, you know, there's always tears, and they're just so emotional. And we think, look at those people. I mean, they're all over the place. I mean, I know we're supposed to love God with all of our heart, but seriously, this is ridiculous. They just need to get it together. They're just so emotional. And they look over and say, I mean, look at these people showing their love to God. I mean, they stand there like this in church. They just sort of still and they scowl. I mean, where's the love of Jesus in these people? I mean, don't they have any freedom? Don't they have any joy? They should show their love of God like me. Church should be composed of all kinds of people, providing that they're like me in the ways that matter most to me. How we worship, how they show their love of God, political issues. Did you hear she didn't sign the petition? Did you see what he posted in the church Facebook group? I mean, how can anyone who calls himself a follower of Jesus have that view on this issue? And then insert issue here. Climate change, Great Barrier Reef, immigration policy, deregulation of the dairy industry, blah, 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 whatever it is for you. How can anyone who calls himself a follower of Jesus vote for that party, support that policy, think like that? Houston, we have a problem. Yeah, we'll see how we go. I mean, look at them. Don't they know it's not working anymore? I mean, this is now the fifth year we've had Cave Quest theme for our VBS program. I mean, it hasn't worked last year or the year before or the year before, the year before. Don't they know that we need a fresh way to do things? I mean, they're not open to new ideas. They just want to do the same thing the same way every single time. Or conversely, they come in here, they think they can know better than us. They've never won Dunce Cave Quest theme. We know that year after year it works. They can't just come in here and take over. They can't just come in here and change microphones like I'm about to do.
Hello. I do actually have weird ears, by the way. I don't like sunglasses. I like wearing sunglasses about 5 minutes, and then I'm like, oh, it just irritates me. Anyway, what are we talking about? Ministry strategy. Yeah, they come in here, they think they know better than us, or they're not open to new ideas. I mean, they're just always doing it the same way. We need to think differently about this. The church should be composed of all kinds of people, providing they like me in the ways that matter most to me, doesn't affect my life in any way. I mean, the obvious one is diversity around what time church starts. You might have been here at 9:30 on the dot, waiting patiently in your seat, thinking, guys, it's 9:30. We start at 9:30. It's advertised every single week. The church should be composed of all kinds of people, providing they think church starts at 9:30 like me, not 9:45, not 9:15. Let's come on time. This is important, people. You know, diversity around all kinds of different things. Church spending. I can't believe we're allocating $10,000 to a church coffee machine. I mean, is that even God-honoring? Is that even right? Or I can't believe we're not allocating $10,000 to a coffee machine. I mean, how are we going to reach people in the neighborhood for Jesus? I mean, these days, if you don't have good coffee, you don't have anything. It's true, isn't it? It's true, isn't it? Yeah, amen, brother. Preach it, brother. Preach it. Church spending. Personalities. Some of us are loud. Some of us are soft. Some of us are fast. Some of us are slow. Some of us are introverts, some extroverts. Some of us are aware of personal body space boundaries, and some of us maybe aren't so aware of personal body space boundaries. Have you ever had a conversation with someone where you just keep taking steps backwards? Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, thanks so much. And they just keep walking after you, and you're like, dude, I just need more space. Like, I'm all for diversity, but you need to just back off. I need more space. Personality diversity. Some people in church will drive you crazy because they're not like you when it comes to personality. They're big and loud and fast, and they're risk takers, and kind of you have a conversation with them and at the end of it you feel tired just because they've got so much kind of going on. Other people, you're like, hello, are you even awake? Come on, wake up. This is important. I'm all for diversity, providing you're like me. Some people in church drive you crazy, am I right? We have to get through this. What do we do with this? Generation gap. Those young people. I mean, I'm all for having young people in church. It's important that we include young people, but they need to show respect. They need to take their hats off. They need to pull their pants up. They need to take their earphones out. They need to learn respect if they're going to come into our church. Or conversely, those old people. I mean, they need to know that we're part of the church too. That this is the future. That it's not just their church, it's our church too. They need to put their glasses on. They need to put their hearing aids in. You know. More for diversity, providing it doesn't affect my life in any way. And they're like me in the ways that matter most to me. Socioeconomic differences. I mean, these rich people, they turn up in their Lexus. I hope no one has a Lexus today. It's just an analogy. They turn up in the... I never bring my Lexus when I preach at other churches. And, you know, they turn up in their Lexus and they come in like they own the place, you know, and they just exude this sense of superiority and they drive me crazy, those rich people. Or conversely, those poor people. I mean, they turn up in their 2000 Corolla, which is what I drive, by the way, and with their 269,000 Ks on the clock and the stereo is worth more than the car. I mean, don't they? And then all the stereotyping starts. Why don't they just get a better job? Why don't they just have better education? It's their fault, you know, they're in this situation. And we're all for diversity, providing it doesn't affect us in any way, and people are like us in the ways that matter most to us. Christian maturity. In a church like this, there'll be a huge variety of Christian maturity. There'll be some people that have been walking with the Lord for so many decades, they should really be in heaven. I mean, you're so holy, it's just time to wrap this thing up and be with the Lord, you know? And there's others of us who are right at the start of our spiritual journey. And that's awesome. We want to have diversity. So if you're further down the track, you might look down at other people and say, I can't believe I don't understand this. Or did I just hear them say a word I thought I heard them say? That word should never be said in church. Or have they not dealt with this in their life yet? Don't they know that that's not appropriate for a Christian to live like that? Or you look up the maturity scale and you say, how come they're so ungracious? Why don't they show more love? Don't they know it's hard when you're starting out? You don't understand everything. You're just learning. It's hard work. You're trying to get the world off you and follow Jesus. And there's a gap in Christian maturity, and we have to kind of come to terms with that. And that is not even taking into consideration culture, ethnicity, and language. Folks, there is such an enormous amount of diversity in a church family like this. So while we say, yes, multiculturalism, yes, diversity, we believe the church should be composed of all kinds of people, amen, when the rubber hits the road, if we're really honest with ourselves in our heart of hearts, we usually think like this. The church should be composed of all kinds of people, providing they're like me in the ways that matter most to me, whatever one of those is your thing, and it doesn't affect my life in any way. But if I'm put out, if I have to change, then I'm not so keen on diversity. So what do we do with that? How do we reconcile that? How do we make, how do we overcome that? So we actually believe, yes, the church should be composed of all kinds of people. How do you reconnect the disconnect? And I've got three strategies for us this morning. First of all, we have to celebrate diversity. Not just tolerate, all right, come to our church, that's fine, I guess, you're welcome, you know. Not even just embrace, yeah, diversity. But find a way to celebrate. You've got to find a way to celebrate diversity. That's God's heart. Secondly, you've got to be united around what really matters. You can't have diversity unless you have absolute unity around what really counts, and that's the gospel. And thirdly, probably most importantly, you've got to find a way to lay aside your own preferences and agendas and put others first. That's where we're going to go. I want to take you through those three points so that you really can embrace multiculturalism and diversity. And it goes from just being a stated value, yeah, we believe in diversity, to actually something that is embraced and celebrated and becomes an increasingly godly reality. Sound good? All right, let's jump into that. First of all, you've got to find a way to celebrate diversity because it's God's heart. You look at the beginning in Genesis, you look in the middle at the gospel, the ministry of Jesus, and you look at the end in Revelation, and you'll see that diversity is always being God's heart. We're very comfortable with our kind of tolerating diversity. If you want to do that over there, that's fine. I'll let you do that. But to celebrate it, to value it, to pull it in close and lift it up, that's God's heart. You look at Genesis chapter 12. This is the calling of Abraham. God calls Abraham and he says, I'm going to bless you. And through you, through Jesus, I'm going to bless the whole world. Every nation, every people will be blessed. That's my plan. To bless a man, to bless a family, to bless a nation, Israel, to bless the whole world through Christ. From day one, God's heart was to bless all people. Let me see Mark 11. This is Jesus clearing the temple. And Jesus says, is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. Remember the story? Jesus goes into the temple and there's corruption. People are ripping other people off. They're selling kind of temple credits. Oh, your money's no good. You need special temple money. They're buying and selling. And what Jesus is upset about is not so much the kind of misuse of funds. What upsets him, what really moves him, why he gets so passionate is because of his compassion. Jesus says, the idea of the temple is it's meant to be a place where all people can come and have access to God. It's meant to be a house of prayer for all nations. It's about people having access to God and worshiping Him. So it is compassion, a love to see all people have access to God that makes Jesus so passionate and why He turns over tables and cracks the whip. He's moved to bring the nations back in. He's devastated that people are being excluded because of the corruption in the church. We see it most beautifully in Revelation. This is at the end of our story and the start of our true story, I guess, the new heavens and the new earth. And this is the Apostle John talking, Revelation chapter 7. After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes, which is about purity and holiness, and were holding palm branches in their hands. They cried out in a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God, who sits on the throne, and to the Lamb." Every tribe, tongue, and nation, all gathered, all holy, all pure, all worshipping together in one voice. Isn't that beautiful? So God's heart is for diversity. God's heart is that we would not just tolerate, not even just embrace. Embrace means go with the flow. Oh, well, I guess we're doing this thing. Here we go. But no. Celebrating is about saying, isn't this awesome? Isn't this fantastic? Aren't we better off now that we've got a Nigerian in our church family? Praise God. This is great. Let's celebrate. Where's the champagne? Where's the caviar? Where's the fireworks? Let's party. This is awesome. God is working because we're becoming more and more and more the people of God as we grow in diversity, heading towards that great day in Revelation. So you've got to find a way not just to tolerate, not just to embrace, but to celebrate diversity. It's the heart of God. Always has been, always will be. Second strategy. You can only have diversity if you have unity around what matters most. Yeah. Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, same thing. We're diverse. Bom, bom. Not how it works. You can only have diversity on all those other things when you have absolute clarity and unity around what matters most, and that is the gospel. Who is Jesus? What has he done? How do we get saved? What does it mean to follow him? Unless you have unity around that, you can't have diversity in any other area. Doesn't the Bible say, what does light have to do with darkness? So we can't embrace everything. We can only embrace some things if we have absolute clarity and unity around the gospel. And the book of Galatians, a lot of it is about this. It's about this idea of making sure the gospel's straight, making sure we have clarity around what really matters. Now, Galatians, if you haven't read the book before, it's a great book. It's pretty intense. It's a pretty intense book. You know, it isn't all kind of nice and soft and fluffy. It's Paul coming in hard and heavy and confronting stuff. And what he confronts is particularly false doctrine when it comes to the gospel. And we see this really strongly in chapter 1 of Galatians 1. Galatians 1, sheepers. Verse 6, here we go. So Paul basically says, hey guys, how you going? Paul here, hope you're going well. Now, I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who has called you to live in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Insert, huh, in there. That's what the dash means, by the way. Huh? Which is really no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. See the word there, pervert? That word means to turn inside out, to turn upside down, to invert, to completely change. When your insides are on the outside and your outsides are on the inside, something's gone horribly wrong. Okay? You turned inside out. And what Paul is saying is, you can't tamper with the gospel. You can't tweak the gospel. You can't be like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. You make one small change and you change the whole thing. It's like a phone number. You change one digit in the phone number, you might as well have changed every digit, because one small change turns the thing inside out, upside down. It no longer makes any sense. It's not just a small shade of difference. It's a completely different thing. It's true, isn't it? If you ring my number with one digit wrong, I won't answer the phone. You might as well have called 007. It makes no difference. One small change changes everything. That's what Paul is saying here about the gospel. You see, what happened was some people came from Jerusalem. They called them the Judaizers. And they said to the new Christians, yeah, Jesus is important. So it's not just that you have faith in Jesus, but it's also that you have to obey the law, the Jewish law, the ceremonial law, the moral law, and then you'll be saved. Jesus plus obeying the law equals salvation. That was their message. And Paul comes in, he says, ba-bong. You make a small change, it changes everything. You change the order of those three things. In other words, Jesus plus good works equals salvation, and you've completely changed the message. You've completely changed the gospel. Because the gospel, as you know, goes faith in Jesus equals salvation plus good works. Once you're saved, you do good works. Right? So what Paul is saying here, you can't just change the gospel a bit. You change everything. He says they've perverted it. They've inverted it, which is really no gospel at all. Small tweak changes everything. You've got to have absolute clarity around what the gospel is. Only once you have that can you have diversity in other things. He goes on in chapter 2 of Galatians, and this is a pretty full-on passage here. This is the Apostle Paul confronting the Apostle Peter publicly calls him out. Should we have conflict in church? Yes, absolutely, providing it's around the gospel. Should one Christian leader, Pastor Mark, call out another Christian leader, Pastor Matt, publicly? Yes, absolutely, providing it's around the central elements of the gospel. Okay, let's take a look. This is Galatians chapter 2, and this is how important it is to have unity on what really matters so that we can celebrate diversity in other things. When Caiaphas, which is another name for Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. When I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Caiaphas, in front of them all, you're a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile and not a Jew? How is it then that you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs? So Peter is in Antioch. The Jews and the Gentiles have come together, which is beautiful. They're a diverse church. Some heavy hitters come from Jerusalem, from James, brother of Jesus. And Peter gets peer pressured into disassociating himself from the Gentiles, and just to hang out with the Jews. You might look at that and say, Paul, buddy, ease up. I mean, that happens every lunchtime in every high school. Peer pressure to leave one group and go have lunch with another group. Like, this is not a big deal. This is, sure, it's not very kind. It's a little bit of mild racism. It's a little bit insensitive. It's a bit selfish. It's a bit exclusive. But really, do you need to call him out publicly? Surely it doesn't matter that much. That's not what's happening. These Judaizers were saying, the way you get saved is you have to do the works of the law, obey the Jewish law, as well as faith in Jesus, and then you'll be saved. So what Paul is saying, or what Peter is doing by ostracizing himself, he's saying to the Gentiles, if you want to be a Christian, you've got to become a Jew first. This is the in-group, the Jews, and you're now part of the out-group. The only way to be in the in-group, the only way to be a true follower of Jesus is to become Jewish first. In other words, what Peter does is he makes salvation about the Jewish law, not about faith in Christ. See the big deal? Peter has written Jesus out of the story of salvation. How do you get saved, Peter? Well, you become Jewish, and then you follow Jesus. So now the Gentiles have been like, well, I want to get saved, so I guess I better go get circumcised. And imagine doing that without anesthetic as an adult man. Anyway, another story. I'll join the Jews, and I'll follow the laws of Moses, all the Jewish customs, and then I'll be saved. And Paul comes up, and he's like, what? Are you kidding me? Peter, do you understand what you're doing? You've just told these people that Jesus' death and resurrection on the cross is not the way to get saved. They've got to become Jewish. Dude, you are wrong. And he calls him out. So yes, you should have a fight in church, providing it's about the work of Christ and what it means to be saved. See how important this is? You can't celebrate diversity unless you have clarity around what really matters, and that is the gospel of Christ. Whew. All right, number three. Number three, this is my favorite. You're going to lay aside your own preferences and put others first. Lay aside your own preferences and put others first. Philippians chapter 2. Here, Paul's language is not aggressive like it is in Galatians. Here, his language is pleading. He's begging. He's imploring. He's pulling out every stop. He's saying, what do I have to do to get you guys to see this? He really kind of urges them. And this is about laying aside your own agendas and putting others first. Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if being joined to Jesus means anything to you, like if that matters at all, if any comfort from his love, if the love of Jesus has touched you in any way, if any common sharing of the Spirit, if you have any tenderness and compassion, make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, and being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each one of you to the interests of others. Paul says, if you have the same love, the same spirit, and the same mind, the same love. What kind of love is he talking about, the same love? Love of Christ, isn't it? What is Christ's love like? For God so loved the world that he gave. It's a giving love. It's a sacrificing love. It's a love where you spread your arms wide and say, crucify me. It's a love where you say, Father, forgive them. So Paul says, if you have any love like Christ, self-giving, self-sacrificing, serving others, laying down your own self, if what Jesus did on the cross has touched you, give up your own ambition. Do what he did. Love like him. The kind of emptying, giving, serving, offering love, the sacrificial love. It talks about being united in one spirit. What is the one spirit? About the Spirit of Christ. The Spirit who comes to comfort and console. You see, if you take away self-sacrifice for the good of others out of who God is, our God is a God who can't help but continually offer himself for others. Can't help but continually pour out his love and goodness and grace. Self-sacrifice for those that don't deserve it. It's compulsive. It wasn't like there was a showdown in heaven and Jesus said, I'm not going. And God the Father said, yes, you are. And the Holy Spirit said, listen to your Father. You know? That's not how it happened. They're a self-giving, self-sacrificing God. If you take gracious, self-sacrificing love away from who God is, you no longer have the God of the Bible. So what does it mean to have one love and one spirit, to have one mind? It means to be like Jesus, who emptied himself, made himself nothing. Those are the next few verses of this passage. Became a servant, became obedient to death, even death on a cross. What I'm trying to say to you is, if you follow Jesus, and if the love of Jesus has touched your heart, which I hope it has, you will increasingly learn to put aside your own desires. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Why? Because you've been encouraged by being united with Christ. Why? Because you've been comforted by his love. Why? Because you share in the common spirit. Why? Because you have tenderness and compassion. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In other words, choose to be the least important person in this church. Isn't that what it means? See, here's how it normally works for us. This is kind of the normal order. I've got a little slide here that describes the order. Okay. This is our way, what we normally do. What matters most is me. My preferences, my comfort, my desire, my ideas, my agenda. I'm the most important person in this church. Then, what matters most is next to my tribe, my us, my people, the group I'm part of. Then, we matter more than them, another group, another tribe, another team, and we certainly matter more than him or her, because they're idiots. Everyone knows that, right? So that's the normal order. We matter most, then the group we're part of, then the other group, and then a particular individual. But that's not the Jesus way. The Jesus way is turn that upside down. So the Jesus way is this. He or she matters more, matters most. Love your enemy. Pray for those that persecute you. Whatever you do for the least of these. You starting to understand it? They matter most. Him or her, the enemy. Go the extra mile. Turn the other cheek. Love the unlovable. Father, forgive them. That's the Jesus way. They matter first. The alien, the orphan, the outcast, the bully. Value them the most. Pour out love on them. Sacrifice and give for them. Then, the group they're a part of. Them. Then, us. Then, me. So if anyone's going to miss out, it's me. I'm going to lay down my own preferences, my own agendas, my own desires, my own hopes and dreams. I'm going to empty myself, give of myself for the sake of my team, my group, my us. And we are going to do that for them because they matter more than us. We're choosing, like Jesus, to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but rather in humility to consider others better than ourselves. And then him or her, the unlovable, the outcast, the one that drives us crazy, we're going to love and serve and sacrifice for them. See how this works? At the start, I told you, you are the least important person in this church. And you went, don't think that's right. But see, if you do this, motivated by love, so you can choose to see yourself, choose to be the least important person in this church. That's the gold. Make a decision to put everyone else above you. So you can sit there and go, yeah, you know what? I am the least important person in this church. I'm choosing to place myself there for the good of others. Because only when I make myself the least important person can we truly celebrate diversity. Can we truly embrace multiculturalism? Because I'm looking after everyone else. So I said at the start, you wouldn't agree with me, but by the end you would. And you'll thank me for saying it. And you'll be 200 times more blessed. Because one person went like this. What? If I think I'm the most important person in this church, I'm the only one looking out for me. So one person is seeking to bless me, and that's me. But if you all adopt this view and say, I'm choosing to make myself the least important person, then all of you put me ahead of yourselves. So I'm 200 times more blessed. Because I have 200 people, every person here saying, you know what, I'll lay down my own agenda for you, brother, out of reverence for Christ, in modeling sacrificial love. And it's the same for each of us. So Pastor Matt stands up and everyone says, Matt, you're more important than us, not because you're the pastor, but because we're choosing to put ourselves underneath you. So we're choosing to put ourselves underneath you to serve you and to seek your good out of humility. We're seeking to serve you and to bless you. So if you say I'm the most important person, you're the only one looking after you. But if each of us say you're the most important person in this church, guess what? All of us are looking after all of us. So each of us has everyone saying, I will put you first. Don't you want to belong to a church like that? Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be an amazing testimony? Someone walks in here for the first time. Maybe that's you today. You're like, man, everyone treated me like I was royalty. They didn't suck up to me. They just served me and loved me. Gave me a free coffee from the $10,000 coffee machine from the budget this year. They just served me and loved me. Everyone treated me like I was the most important person in this place. Single mum rings up the church looking for some help. We gather around her. We help her out. Wouldn't that be incredible? You know, old widow phones up saying, I can't mow my lawn. Maybe you could help me. I saw your lawn's nice and short, even though you have 400 acres of grass. I'm so envious of your block, by the way. Our church is kind of a bit squished in. We can all do that. So what I'm asking you to do today is, in order to believe the truth that the church should be composed of all kinds of people, you've got to choose to be the least important person in this church. You've got to celebrate diversity as God's heart. You've got to be united around what matters most, the gospel. And you've got to finally, each day, choose to lay down your own agenda to put others first ahead of yourself. And if you do that, this will be the greatest place on earth. Just as the band come back, I want to tell you a quick story. We had a pastor in our church a few years ago. His name was Chris. And Chris was with us for 5 years and then went to Tassie for a few years, came back for a couple of years, this is 2 years ago, to prepare for the mission field. So Chris is in our church, he's gathering support, he's praying, he's getting his paperwork sorted out to go to Southeast Asia as a missionary. We're hanging out one day, and we're driving around in his car. To show you a picture of his car here, it's a 2003 Kia Spectra, which it turns out is not the car James Bond drives. And he said, "Oh, Westy, I've got to sell this car. It's driving me crazy. It's been on Gumtree for ages. I can't sell it. I want $1,500 for it." I said, "Oh, really, Chris? I'm interested in buying a second car. What, you know, I need to get the kids from school and stuff. And how much do you want for it?" And he said, "Oh, Westy, mate, you're a poor pastor. Look, if you could do $500, like, that would be awesome. Like, even if you can't manage that, that's okay. Whatever you can do." And I'm like, "Don't be ridiculous, Chris. There is no way I'm paying $500 for that. $1,500, top dollar. That's what I'm paying." "Well, Westy, you see, the rego runs out soon, so I really can't sell it to you for $1,500. I could do $1,300. I knock $200 off for the rego." And I'm like, "No, no way. I'll meet you halfway. $1,400, my final offer." So I bought his car for $1,400. We were joking about it afterwards, saying, "Isn't that cool? Because I was trying to outbless him, and he was trying to outbless me." And he was like, no, I'm going to miss out." And I was like, no, I'm going to miss out. No, I'm going to go with it. No, I'm going to pay too much. No, I'm going to, you know. And we thought, isn't that a beautiful picture of the gospel, trying to outdo each other with acts of service? Just as we close, let me read to you from Romans chapter 12 about outdoing each other with acts of service. "Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor." Again, back to Philippians, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others." Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you that you modeled to us what it means to put yourself at the bottom. You emptied yourself. You took on flesh and bone. You were humiliated and rejected and despised. You were beaten and mocked. You didn't get the honor you deserved. You were spat on and crucified instead of worshipped and adored. And Jesus, you showed us out of love what it means to consider yourself the least important person, to place yourself at the bottom, to empty yourself of ambition and pride and personal preference in order to love and bless and build up others. So Lord, I thank you for your example. Lord, and I pray that this church would catch that. And that they, each person here, would embrace the truth. I am the least important person in this church. I am choosing to make myself, to see myself as the one who misses out, the one who doesn't get the recognition, doesn't get their way, who goes without, who gives for the sake of others. And Lord, as each of us do that, we just really believe that this is going to have an incredible, profound effect on our church community. That we will truly be able to embrace all kinds of people. Because none of us are clinging to our power. None of us are fighting for our position. Each of us is saying, "Brother, can I help you? Sister, can I help you? Can I serve you? No, have mine. What can I do to help? God bless you." So Lord, I thank you for your example. And I just pray that this really truly would become the greatest place on earth as each of us do this. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.